This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ravens have a new backup quarterback. His name is Cooper Rush. He's been with Dallas for a bit now and joining us now on the Winter Nation Fan Guest Hotline to talk about that and maybe what the Cowboys may be up to this offseason. Has covered the Cowboys since 1997. He's now with All City DLLS. It's Clarence Hill. And Clarence, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. So we've been saying for a while, just to give you some insight on us, that the Ravens needed to improve their backup quarterback situation. So what are they getting in Cooper Rush?
They're getting a game manager. You know, obviously he's not a guy that's going to, while you with his athleticism, but he's going to do the right thing. He'll get you in the right play. He certainly is a guy that doesn't get flustered. You know, won a lot of games with the Cowboys in place of Dak Prescott. He can win games for you, and certainly he's not going to lose games for you. But just a solid backup quarterback. Doesn't need a lot of reps. It's what you want in a backup quarterback. You want somebody that can hold the fort while your starter's out.
One of the things that stood out to me watching him play, Clarence, is we know that offensive line has been in a little bit of it certainly ain't what it used to be and has been in disrepair. And they can't run the ball a lick the last couple of years. And he's come in pretty much under duress and to your point without getting any reps until Dak gets hurt because Dak gets them all. And like he doesn't seem to take sacks. And in fact, his sack rate's better than Dak's. And like he seems to be self-aware enough to know how athletic he is and how athletic he isn't and to keep them in position to keep fighting to live another day.
Yeah, and I think that's the best part about it. He is self-aware. He knows who he is. He knows his limitations. He knows his body, knows his arm. He knows what type of quarterback he is. And the coaching staff, you should know that as well. And again, you know, and I say win games. I say you can win with him.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you want. He's a guy you can win with, for sure.
Well, Clarence, the Cowboys coming off a pretty disappointing season. What have you thought of their offseason thus far? A lot of one-year deals.
You know, I like to use this John Wooden quote, don't confuse activity with getting something done. Progress. And certainly they've been way more active than they were last year, but have they got appreciably better? You know, the tempo, goal in the offseason is to for the Cowboys to be a Super Bowl team, to be a Super Bowl contender. I mean, they haven't won in 30 years. But when you pay this kind of money to Dak, we pay what you're doing to CD and what you're getting ready to pay what you're doing with Michael Parsons, it should be about winning. It's not about rebuilding. And so how close are they to winning again? And I can say they really haven't gotten appreciably better. I mean, yes, they'll be better than they were last year because, you know, the injuries and guys will be healthy again. But are they a contender? Are they going to get – are they any closer to ridding themselves of this 30-year drought since the last Super Bowl title in 95? And I say no.
Well, and to that end, I mean, with Dak being as banged up as he's been, are you surprised they didn't keep Cooper Rush for this kind of money?
Well, you know, it's just so funny how teams do things. Because we were paying Dak $60 million, so we can't really pay a lot to a backup quarterback.
You know, and you know, you look what the Bengals are doing. They're paying Joe Burrow a lot of money, and they're paying their both receivers a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's how you want to, it's how you decide you want to allocate that money. And, hey, newsflash, you're paying Dak that money because you waited.
Right.
And you waited, too long to sign into a contract and allowed his number to jump and jump and jump. But, I mean, Cooper's getting essentially $6 million.
Right.
If that much, you know, and you're with incentives, okay? You can't pay your backup quarterback who you know has proven that he can win games $6 million. You want to pay him three? I mean, $3 million ain't going to make that much difference on your salary cap. I just don't get it. And I don't know who you're going to get to be a, you know, to be your backup in case Dak gets hurt. And he's gotten hurt a lot over the last few years that can hold a four and win games if he's out.
Clarence, isn't that exactly what's happening with Micah Parsons, though, as he's entering the final year of his deal? Do you see something getting done between Parsons and the Cowboys?
Well, something always gets done. It's just a matter of when. I mean, they waited and allowed the market to jump twice since the start of the offseason. You know, first, you know, you got Max, you know, out of L.A., and then actually three times,
yeah.
You know, you got Miles, Max, and then Jamar. You know, the market for Michael was always going to be the highest-paid defender, most likely the highest-paid non-quarterback, considering what he's done over the first four seasons. And you let that market jump three times in the offseason, you know, since the beginning of the offseason, and possibly again if T.J. Watt signs in his offseason, he's up for, you know, a new deal, he could sign again. You know, why are you waiting? I think it's going to get done, but the wait is what has been the issue for the Cowboys. Same thing with C.D., same thing with Dak. You let the market, you wait, you don't get it done, you don't get ahead of the curve, you let the market jump on you.
We're talking with Clarence Hill, Inside Access here on The Fan. Clarence, is the biggest problem with the Cowboys that Jerry Jones has a GM problem? And I'm looking at my notes and the GM is Jerry Jones. So, I watch what they do and I'm looking at it from 30,000 feet, Clarence, but it doesn't look like a guy that's number one priority is to win.
Well, you know, if there's one common denominator in that 30-year drive, outside of me covering the team, is Jerry Jones being the GM. And you go back to when they were winners, you know, Jimmy Johnson was a true architect of that team. And you know, the Cowboys started in recession when Jimmy left. Yeah, they hung on to win another Super Bowl, but you look at those later years of the 90s and how that team just started bleeding and bleeding and bleeding, and now we're here 30 years since the last Super Bowl title. No, the only common denominator is Jerry Jones. You know, yes, they're the richest franchise in sports, and he's a Hall of Fame owner, and he knows how to make a billion-dollar franchise. And, like, you know, I always, you know, tell my kids, and certainly my parents told me, you can't serve two masters, okay? You can't try to win and also try to be the biggest selling team. You know, you got something has to come first, and usually winning helps you sell. But the Cowboys – They make money without winning, you know. And I
yes.
people say, well, how much could they make if they win? I don't know. They make it more than God allowed right now, and they haven't won nothing. So what's going to make Jerry change?
Well, I want to get your perspective on the team down the road here in Washington, who, I mean, when the Ravens played them last year, it was the highest selling regular season ticket we've seen in a long time. And there's a lot of excitement about that team. And we know Philly's a juggernaut, but like, I look at what Washington's doing, and I'm a little quizzical of it because, like, you let Chin and you let Fowler leave your building, who are younger guys with some upside, but we're bringing back Wagner in his mid-30s, and we're bringing back Ertz in his mid-30s, and we're bringing in Debo for a lot of money when he looks like he's playing like he's 40. What do you think of their offseason so far?
Well, I mean, I think Washington is trying to win. Now, we could argue about how they've gone about it. You could argue about the decisions they've made. But they look like a team that's trying to win now. They're trying to maximize their window now with their quarterback on the rookie deal. You know, and so that's all you can ask for. You know, we could argue about the moves, but Debo is better than what they had as number two receiver. He may be looking 40, but he's still – a weapon. He's still a run after catch guy. Certainly, you know, he's going to be your number two. You're not asking to be number one.
Right.
He's going to be your number two. And Debo at number two is better when the Cowboys have a number two.
Yes.
Clarence Hill covers the Cowboys for All City DLLS. Clarence, this was great. Thank you so much.
Appreciate
for your time.
You, buddy.
I appreciate you guys.
Thanks, Clarence.
Coming up next is T-Bone Time, TMI with TIM. What you got?
We're almost one full week removed from the start of the league year, and the Ravens offense has really taken shape, especially since Mark Andrews got that roster bonus his way, so looking more and more likely that he'll be back. But what about the defense? Is that where they could go young and maybe use a lot of their draft capital on? We'll get into it next on The Fan.
It's T-Bone time, TMI with TIM, and the floor is yours.
Real quick, Bone, if I run you over in the parking lot after the show, you know what to do,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you know who to call.
Nick Parr?
Yeah.
He's my guy.
Yep.
You think it's just a car, or you think it's anything?
Any four-wheel vehicle. Yeah.
What if you got run over by a bike?
Well, how about one of the scooters? Downtown?
Right, electronic scooter.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you still can call them.
What about unicycle?
I don't know if I told you guys this. When I went skiing, I actually took out a girl.
Nice.
Whoa. Do you think that would give Nick a call?
Those are all valid questions.
They are.
But a car,
definitely.
Car is, you know exactly
call
what to
Nick
do.
Yes. Car.
Hoverboard, like Back to the Future? I don't know. Maybe not.
Let Bone get to his very important segment.
We're 6 days removed from the start of the league year. And now just looking at the Ravens' picture in terms of cap, which they still have multiple moves that they could make in order to free up some more space. But right now, $12.6 million. They restructured Marlon Humphrey already. They could still do the same for Nnamdi Matabike, Lamar Jackson as well, Roquan Smith. I personally wouldn't touch that contract.
Me neither.
But it's an option for you. And the offense, guys, you're pretty much running it back at this point, where you got four or five starters on the offensive line. We've heard from Ronnie Stanley really talk up Andrew Voorhees moving forward, and he started for him last year, got hurt in that Dallas game, and then Patrick McCary took over, and the rest is history. But you would think that he's going to get a crack at it. You got both your starting wide receivers back, adding DeAndre Hopkins, upgrade over Nelson Aguilar. Looks like you're going to return your entire tight end room with Andrews cashing that roster bonus over the weekend.
I don't think that's a guarantee just yet, but we'll see.
I'm not saying it's a guarantee, but it would be out of character for them to pay a $4 million bonus.
But, you might get more in trade because they're only getting seven.
Now they're only paying him.
You could.
If he only plays half a year, because that's been the case lately, you're still only paying him $1 million a game.
How much have you talked about their cash spent?
Look. We talked at the open of the show, Kevin Willard. Sometimes when you're doing things a certain way and it's not working, you got to be willing to change it up.
Well, right now,
they could trade him at the draft.
I think so.
It's possible.
I think they do still.
It's possible. That's your opinion. I think they roll with him, but we'll see.
He's going to be thrilled playing on that 1 year option.
I'm not saying he's going to be thrilled playing on it. You got your whole running back room back, Cooper Rush added in, Ricard's back, and the offense as a whole still pretty young, where six of the projected starters in their fifth year were younger. And something, if they do end up keeping Mark Andrews, adding in Hopkins, they were first in red zone percentage last year by a pretty wide margin at 74%. So you only got stronger there. But the defense, and that's where I'm kind of wondering, and there's still guys out there. We bring up Calais Campbell's name up a lot, Justin Simmons. We bring up his name up a good bit as well. But they probably got maybe one or two swings in them, you think, in terms of a defensive free agent. I think a lot of this is going to come through the draft. And it's looking more and more likely that they're going to lean into but adding to this defense with the 11 picks that they currently have. And there's holes at pretty much every single level of this defense right now. You need at least two defensive linemen. You need another guy on the edge.
Who's going to linebacker?
Who's going to play next to Roquan Smith? Third safety.
Need a free safety.
You need corner with Brandon Stevens gone as well. I think you need some corner depth there too. So Eric DaCosta, Ozzie Newsome before him, they always talk best player available, but right now it's looking like it's going to be a lot of defense.
Yeah, and I think the way this draft lays out, especially up front and front seven personnel, it's one where you're going to probably take multiple bites at the apple. Look, they're always going to draft some offensive linemen, and you always should be drafting offensive linemen. And
We haven't brought it up
Yeah, if they keep all these picks, you might be taking a shot on a running back you really like who's great value in the sixth or seventh round. You don't want to fight for somebody to try to sign as a street free agent. Kicker at the very end of the draft or something like that could be in play. I mean, if they like a quarterback in day three, you should always take a quarterback. Especially when you have this many picks.
Yeah, a developmental guy. And we haven't brought it up yet, but is anyone else shocked they brought back Ben Cleveland? And I'm sure he's making the vet minimum. I'm sure he's making the vet minimum, but after the DUI and just
super
how
cheap.
That's played out.
So are a lot of other people.
Yeah.
If they're comfortable with him. They know him.
Comfortable with him. Hey. Was that 0.20?
It was
close to it. Dude,
how much you got to drink to blow 0.20 at his size? It's like a 30 pack.
Yeah. Well, he's also 350 pounds.
That's what he's saying.
That's
exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised they brought him back. It would have been an easy one to distance yourself from.
Yeah.
I know he cooks a mean squirrel.
Yeah.
There's value to that.
Apparently. Now, is he still here after the draft?
Yeah, he's not. He's not going to be guaranteed a roster spot. Far from it. Even if he's here during training camp, he's going to have to earn a spot. But I did find it interesting.
Yeah, he's depth piece, sixth lineman, maybe backup guard.
I think he's less than your sixth lineman. I think he's like
they had him get reps at center, right?
Yeah, that was fun. That was a fun time.
You know? Yeah, it happened.
Hey, we'll switch to baseball next. Rob Bradford, he covers the Red Sox for WEI, also has an Odyssey podcast. Baseball isn't boring. We'll get his thoughts on this Rafael Devers situation. Also, the AL East with Rob next here on The Fan. We're days away from opening day. Actually, we got baseball that counted this morning with the Dodgers beating the Cubs, but less than 10 days away from opening day for the rest of us. And let's talk some baseball now as we head out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. Rob Bradford covers the Red Sox for WEI, also has the Odyssey podcast. Baseball isn't boring. And Rob, thank you as always for your time. And we want to start with the Red Sox and Rafael Devers in particular. He originally said he didn't want to move off third base. Then I guess he said he was okay with it. And now he's got a issue. He doesn't want to travel to their exhibition games in Mexico. Is this just an ouchie or is there something bigger going on here with Devers?
No, I don't think the Mexico thing really has anything to do with anything because there's a few different guys who are staying behind because the reality is, and first of all, it's great to talk to you guys. Always a pleasure. And I'd say this is that, you know, I think that this is an ill-conceived trip to Mexico. Mm. It just is. I mean, it's they're playing a team that is like the equivalent of a double-A team. So the way that they look at it, I know Trevor Story staying behind, a few other guys, the way they're saying it, like, hey, you know, we can stay back and hit off the traject machine, hit off triple-A pitchers or whatever it is. But the bigger picture with Devers is you're right. I mean, there's no question that this is the biggest storyline for the entirety of camp, but at the heart of it, why that press conference was awesome and entertaining, where he says, you know, are you going to do this? No. Are you going to do this? No. Are you going to do this? No. The reality is the history of baseball suggests that if you switch positions, you switch positions, and ultimately you get over it. And anybody who had seen Alex Bregman play third and Rafael Devers hit and play third, you know, this is the best scenario. Red Sox knew this. They knew this. And Rafael Devers has got nowhere to go. I mean, that's the biggest change here, is that he has gotten to the point, an opening day, said, hey, it is what it is. I'm going to hit. I'm going to DH and then go from there because he's got 9 years left on his contract. There's just nowhere else to go.
Excuse me. Well, obviously he said what he sort of said outwardly, but how convinced are you that he actually is, like, really in his heart of hearts okay with this, and how much do you think this could fester? And we've had a lot of fun playing Tristan Cash's clips on this show.
Yes.
Like, my God, he'll tell you the optimal lineup for every day and who should be where and what Rafi should and shouldn't be doing. Like, is he long for that place? It's one thing when Joe Burrow comes out and says, I know how much everybody's cap number should be and how to restructure money because he's Joe bleeping Burrow. But, I mean, is this kid long for there? I know that's a lot of questions in one.
No. So, well, I'll start with the Devers thing. Is that I think that the reality is that he's going to be okay. He's gonna show up. He's going to hit. And now, as you go longer, is he going to hit in April? So I think he'll hit. He's an awesome hitter. But what happens if he doesn't hit in April?
Right.
Then all of a sudden everyone's like, wait a second. You know, he's not equipped to be DH. You're taking away his vibe. You're taking away his rhythms and everything else like that. So I don't think that'll happen. But if it does, it opens a whole new can. But the reality is that Bregman is a Gold Glove third baseman. You play him there. You have other options at second. And Devers is still a really, really good hitter. And the other part about this is that if you want to keep Devers healthy, which he hasn't been for the last 2 months of the season for about 5 years now, then you DH him. You take him off the field. Maybe you put him in there once in a while. But the Casas thing's interesting because you're right. I mean, he had that press conference, and I said this before. It was a missed opportunity for us where we could have asked him about the JFK assassination.
Right.
We could have asked him about, you know, anything, and he would have given his opinion. He was given his opinion, and that's what he does. He never backs off of it. I know that they have numerous times said, Tristan, come on, come on, come on. And the reality with Casas is that for our purposes, he's entertaining. He's good to deal with because he's never going to give you a predictable answer. But he's also super polarizing. Like, I don't know if there's a more polarizing athlete in Boston right now than Tristan Casas. When he's going good, and he has had some runs where he's really, really good, everyone's like, yeah, you can do whatever you want. Sunbathe in the middle of, you know, Kenmore Square. Who cares? But if he's hurt, if he's injured, if he's not playing, if he's not producing, then that's when everyone says, what's this guy doing, this wacky guy with a painted fingernail, saying these things about the prospects should start in the minor leagues. That's the problem. It's that cut and dry. Either you produce or you don't. Another one that he has a lot to gain or lose, I think, in that first month.
Rob, the Red Sox starting rotation banged up. Giolito, Brian Bayo, Cutter Crawford, they are all not going to be ready to start the season. What's the latest on the starting rotation? Are they going to be able to weather that storm?
Yeah, I mean, they're much better equipped than they have been in recent years. I mean, you still have Crochet, you have Buehler, who has looked good, and you have Houck, who was an all-star last year. That's three pretty good guys. Now, Giolito and Bayo, I mean, I think that they're going to pitch in April at some point. So it's not going to be like a delayed thing. Crawford might be a little bit longer. But in the meantime, you get this guy, Richard Fitz, who they got in the Verdugo trade. You know, pour one out for Alex, man. Oh, man, I can't believe he's not signed yet. You know, it's you know, you got this deal. You got this guy in Richard Fitz who all of a sudden is now hitting 99 and dominating everybody in spring training. It was good when he was called up for four or five starts last year. So he's a great fail-safe while you get these other guys. So I do think that that part of their equation, they're going to be okay. Now, who's going to close for them? That's a different situation.
We're talking with Rob Bradford. It's Inside Access here on the Fan. So, Rob, you mentioned the Red Sox injuries, and you think that a couple of them are short-term. Orioles have a situation with Grayson Rodriguez. We don't know when he'll be back. The Yankees, man, Luis Hill's going to miss a few months. Gerrit Cole's going to miss the whole year. Clark Schmidt, now Aaron Boone said today, he's probably not going to make that April 3rd start. Has this opened the door for the Red Sox to maybe win this division, the injuries with the Orioles and the Yankees?
I think it's opened the door for everyone. Like, this is the thing, is that who's going to walk through it? Who's going to take advantage of it? And you know, we said this, how the American League kind of stunk last year and how some teams, maybe like the Orioles and the Red Sox, didn't do enough at the deadline to take advantage of that. But this year, especially in the American League East, the door is open. I mean, the Yankees are supposed to be the be-all, end-all. And as you point out, they're not the be-all, end-all. They have major, major problems. And, you know, we still don't even know if Bellinger or these guys or Goldschmidt are going to be able to pick up the slack for Soto.
Yeah.
So I think that, yes, not only the Red Sox is there to be had for the Red Sox, all the flaws that the Orioles have, all the flaws that the Blue Jays have, all the uncertainty that the Rays have, it is there to be had. And now, like, that's the thing to me, is that it's going to be fascinating not only at the beginning of the year, but who is going to be the most aggressive at the trade deadline. That, to me, is going to be, I think, rubber is going to meet the road when it comes to this division, no question about it.
I mean, could the AL Central be the best? Like, I'm pretty bullish on the Tigers. The Royals might regress a little bit. I don't think Cleveland has enough starting pitching, but they all get to beat up on the White Sox a fair amount. Like, Could the Central be and look if the a big if. If the Twins ever fielded their regular starting nine with any their best starting nine with any regularity, they might be the best team in the American League. Like, could the Central be legit?
Yeah, absolutely. Last year, the perception of the Central heading into after spring training was so bad that some people were suggesting the White Sox actually could contend. that's how bad that it was, or it's the perception
right.
of it anyway. Now, we can't, like, this is, we've passed the point of sleeping on these teams. You had the Guardians make the LCS. You had the Tigers, who are only getting better, not only with their prospects, but guys they've had it. They're obviously a postseason team. And then, of course, Kansas City. I mean, Kansas City, I think, is the most underrated team that nobody talks about. And, yeah, they hit a rough patch when they play the Yankees in the playoffs. But they're a good team, man. Like, they're a good team.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, you look at these teams, and the problem is I think that they don't have the off-season shock and awe
right.
of the acquisitions. They just have good players, and they make smart moves. I think those three teams I mentioned, they make smart moves. And I think because of that, they're positioning themselves pretty well.
Rob, you mentioned that all of the Yankees' injuries really opens the door for the rest of the AL East, and Ken brought up the Orioles' injuries, but how do you view the O's as we approach opening day?
Yeah, well, listen, this isn't a news flash. Like, and everybody in spring training, and I've been here the entire time, every time the Orioles come up, you hear the same thing. Why didn't they take advantage? Why didn't they take advantage? What has happened? What has happened to the narrative? You know, what that we saw when the ownership switched over, when you got Burns, when you thought you're going to get all the extensions. What, you know, why are they not taking advantage of this situation? That is, fair or not, that is a narrative all around baseball throughout spring training. Now, I will say this, is that, yeah, you know, the Rodriguez thing really hurts. Not having the no doubt about it number one really hurts. But Eflin's a good pitcher. You know, I Charlie Morton's a good pitcher. Cigano, who knows? You know, I don't love the way that the starting pitching is positioned. I don't love the way they're coming out of spring training with the injuries. But you got a pretty good back end in the bullpen. Here's the thing, is that, yeah, is it the Orioles team that everybody in Baltimore wanted, envisioned, thought it was going to be have this epic run starting with last year? No, it's not. But you know what? All these other teams, we just rattle them off. You know, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Blue Jays, all these other teams also have issues. So I'm not going to, much like the Rays, I'm not counting out the Orioles quite yet, especially if you can get guys back and you can figure out who exactly is your number one starter.
Rob Bradford, always great, man. Thank you so much
Thank
for your
you.
Time. We appreciate it.
All right. Always a pleasure, guys. And listen, I mean, I was going to say with the Dodgers, you know, I think the over-under was 104.5.
Yeah.
I was like, I couldn't help it. At about 10 a.m. this morning, I felt like, hey, I got to take the over on this. Not
yeah.
that I would, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I thought it couldn't be possible. Then you actually watched him play.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty
Doesn't
good.
Matter who's
yeah.
on the IL.
Yeah.
They're good for about 108 wins this year.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks.
Coming up next, we get back to the tournament. And who are some of our best bets? What are the upsets we're looking for in the first round? One shining moment next year on The Fan. Tournament gets started tonight. First four, night one. We have, Alabama State and St. Francis early.
That's a barn burner.
Yeah.
First team to 35 wins that one.
As someone who has done some wager on mid-majors, Jason, you know about these
I'm
schools.
On the under on that
yeah.
one.
And then San Diego State, North Carolina, the late game tomorrow. American and Mount St. Mary's early, Texas Xavier late.
Look, we said it a little bit yesterday. I'll reiterate today. When you do the research, there's going to be a team that plays the next two nights that goes further in the tournament than most expect. I suspect the way the bracket lays out, it's the winner for me of that Xavier-Texas game. I don't think having to play on shorter rest is a bad thing for them. Coming off a win, I think Illinois is sitting there licking their wounds, knowing that we are dog crap. Outside of our own barn, offensively and defensively, I think there will be a number of Big Ten teams that come up way smaller than the number next to their name for where they're seated would tell you. I think it starts with the Fighting Illini. Kentucky probably beats Troy, but like, I don't know, man. Like, if it's Texas against Kentucky, I don't think they're going to be pooping their pants. And if it's Texas on what would then be a two-game winning streak coming off a nice run in the conference tournament and playing better down the stretch, I don't think they're going to be petrified of facing Kentucky on a neutral site. So that is a game that interests me. I also feel like if North Carolina wins tonight, don't you just think they're going to end up knocking off a couple of teams and making that idiot AD look right?
Well, that's what I was going to bring up to Ben. Everyone's upset, rightfully so, that Carolina makes it. But Ben, you like them to cover tonight, 4.5?
I like them to win tonight, and then I like them to beat Ole Miss. Ole Miss fell on their face down the stretch. There was a lot of rumors with Chris Beard leaving, and after that, they just weren't playing good basketball. It took them a miracle to beat Arkansas when they did. But I think UNC beats San Diego State tonight, but I also think West Virginia would have. I think Indiana would have. Like, it's not really a prop to North Carolina. It's more they get a good draw along with sneaking into the tournament when they shouldn't have.
So what are you mentioned potential upsets with Carolina and Ole Miss. What else could you be having, or not could you be, do you have your eye on as things get started on Thursday?
I've found myself bullish on the draw for the two West Coast Conference teams. And then I start, you know, you start listening to other people, listening to podcasts, reading people who are pretty sharp on college hoops. And there's a number of people who found themselves where I do. I think Alabama's vulnerable. And that Alabama Saint, if it got to be St. Mary's against Alabama, styles make fights. I just think Alabama is going to, at some point, if that's a tight game and you're playing that suffocating St. Mary's pace, aren't they going to feel like they have to make every three? And they're a really streaky team. And, like, the crowd's going to be with St. Mary's. Everybody's going to be with St. Mary's. Like, if we get to that point, I think St. Mary's is dangerous. I've got St. Mary's facing Duke for the right to go to the Final Four.
Wow.
And Gonzaga, like, I think Gonzaga, with no expectations, on a day where they are shooting the ball well and they started to do that better down the stretch and you started seeing them putting up 90 and 95 points a game again. I don't know, man. Like, if I'm Houston, I don't know that I'm super jazzed about facing Gonzaga if it is Gonzaga in my second game.
Well, Ben, you're in the mornings the rest of the week. What are some of your favorite plays for Thursday and Friday?
I was looking, like, last year I picked Yale to beat Auburn, and they did it, and it was like the best thing ever. And I keep looking at them again this year, right? The guy, the
very
kid,
solid team,
Pulakittis, he's 1 foot in the transfer portal right now. He's going to kill it somewhere next year. But last year, he knocked down a bunch of big shots. They had a couple of tough tests in the Ivy League tournament. They end up winning it. Texas A&M, and this is not a shot at the SEC. The SEC is very good, but I think a lot of people like just all wanted to buy into that. So every single SEC team is now, they've played good opponents all year and this and that. Like, there's going to be a lot of them that fluke out. Iowa State Lipscomb kind of scares me. I like watching Iowa State, but they don't have Gilbert. That wouldn't surprise me. And I like a lot of unders. I was talking to you guys off air. There's somebody who blindly bets unders every single year, and it cashes. But, like, the Michigan State Bryant unders, 152.5. Both of those teams play defense. Michigan State seems to be able to defend whoever they want. I like the under there. Upset-wise, wouldn't surprise me if VCU took down BYU. I also like – one of my favorite plays is Mississippi State over Baylor. I think Baylor's just – they had a lot of high expectations coming into the season. They've dealt with injuries all year. There's been a lot of NIL mess there with guys supposedly sitting out because they weren't getting paid what they wanted to and their role and stuff like that. So I kind of like Mississippi State there.
Jason, you like any upsets?
I think Robert Morris is going to make Alabama sweat a little bit. I don't think they're going to win the game. But if you made me throw one dart at a team at a 14 or lower seed doing what used to be thought of as impossible, I do think they could make life a little difficult for them. I think High Point against Purdue is another game where the longer that's close late, if High Point is running all over the place, chucking up shots that are going in, and Purdue tries to meet them 3-for-3 rather than dominate down low, I think there's a recipe for Purdue getting in some trouble there. I'm torn on Auburn. I ended up putting them in my Final Four, but I did various iterations of this. I just, did they peak too soon. Did they think they could take the foot off the gas because they'd already locked up a one, and then somebody knocks them off in the second round? Like, I don't know, man. I think Auburn's either winning it all or, like, losing to Creighton in the second round.
Well, remember, the first four starts tonight. You can hear those games beginning with pregame coverage at 6:30 right here on 105.7 The Fan. How deep can the Terps go in this tournament? We'll ask our friend Chris Nockey. He'll be on the call with Johnny Holiday and Walt Williams coming up this Friday in Seattle. He joins us next here on The Fan.